Chapter 31. Nicholas varies the monotony of Dotheby's Hall by a most vigorous and remarkable proceeding, which leads to consequences of some importance. The cold, feeble dawn of a January morning was stealing in at the windows of the common sleeping room, when Nicholas, raising himself on his arm, looked among the prostrate forms which on every side surrounded him, as though in search of some particular object. It needed a quick eye to detect, from among the huddled mass of sleepers, the form of any given individual. As they lay closely packed together, covered, for warmth's sake, with their patched and ragged clothes, little could be distinguished, but the sharp outlines of pale faces, over which the somber light shed the same dull heavy color, with, here and there, a gaunt arm thrust forth. Its thinness hidden by no covering, but fully exposed to view, in all its shrunken ugliness. There were some who, lying on their backs with upturned faces and clenched hands, just visible in the leaden light, bore more the aspect of dead bodies than of living creatures, and there were others coiled up in two strange and fantastic postures, such as might have been taken for the uneasy efforts of pain, to gain some temporary relief, rather than the freaks of slumber. A few of these were among the youngest of the children slept peacefully on, with smiles upon their faces, dreaming perhaps of home, but ever and again a deep and heavy sigh, breaking the stillness of the room, announced that some new sleeper had awakened to the misery of another day, and, as morning took the place of night, the smiles gradually faded away, with the friendly darkness which had given them birth. Dreams are the bright creatures of poem and legend, who sport on earth in the night season, and melt away in the first beam of the sun, which lights grim care and stern reality on their daily pilgrimage through the world. Nicholas looked upon the sleepers, at first, with the air of one who gazes upon a scene which, though familiar to him, has lost none of its sorrowful effect in consequence, and, afterwards, with a more intense and searching scrutiny, as a man would who missed something his eye was accustomed to meet, and had expected to rest upon. He was still occupied in this search, and had half risen from his bed in the eagerness of his quest, when the voice of Squeers was heard, calling from the bottom of the stairs. "Now then," apostrophe cried that gentleman, "are you going to sleep all day, up there apostrophe, you lazy hounds?" Apostrophe apostrophe added Mrs. Squeers, finishing the sentence, and producing, at the same time, a sharp sound, like that which is occasioned by the lacing of stays. "We shall be down directly, sir," apostrophe replied Nicholas. "Down directly," apostrophe apostrophe said Squeers. "Ah, you had better be down directly, or I'll be down upon some of you in less. Where's that Smike?" Apostrophe apostrophe, Nicholas looked hurriedly round again, but made no answer. "Smike!" apostrophe apostrophe shouted Squeers. "Do you want your head broke in a fresh place, Smike?" apostrophe apostrophe demanded his amiable lady in the same key. Still there was no reply, and still Nicholas stared about him, as did the greater part of the boys, who were by this time roused. "Confound his impudence!" apostrophe apostrophe muttered Squeers, rapping the stair rail impatiently with his cane. "Nickleby!" apostrophe, "well, sir!" apostrophe, "send that obstinate scoundrel down! Don't you hear me calling?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "he is not here, sir," apostrophe replied Nicholas. "Don't tell me a lie," apostrophe retorted the schoolmaster. "He is." Apostrophe, "he is not," apostrophe retorted Nicholas angrily, "don't tell me one." Apostrophe, "we shall soon see that," apostrophe said Mr. Squeers, rushing upstairs. "I'll find him, I warrant you." Apostrophe, with which assurance, Mr. Squeers bounced into the dormitory, and, swinging his cane in the air ready for a blow, darted into the corner, where the lean body of the drudge was usually stretched at night. The cane descended harmlessly upon the ground. There was nobody there. "What does this mean?" apostrophe apostrophe said Squeers, turning round with a very pale face. "Where have you hid him?" Apostrophe, I have seen nothing of him since last night, apostrophe replied Nicholas. Come, apostrophe said Squeers, evidently frightened, though he endeavored to look otherwise. You won't save him this way. Where is he? Apostrophe, at the bottom of the nearest pond for aught I know, apostrophe rejoined Nicholas in a low voice, and fixing his eyes full on the master's face. Damn you, what do you mean by that? Apostrophe, apostrophe retorted Squeers in great perturbation. Without waiting for a reply, he inquired of the boys whether anyone among them knew anything of their missing schoolmate. There was a general hum of anxious denial, in the midst of which, one shrill voice was heard to say as, indeed, everybody thought, colon, please, sir, I think Smike's run away, sir. Apostrophe, ha! Apostrophe, apostrophe cried Squeers, turning sharp round. Who said that? Apostrophe, Tompkins, please sir, apostrophe rejoined a chorus of voices. Mr. Squeers made a plunge into the crowd, and at one dive, caught a very little boy, habited still in his night gear, and the perplexed expression of whose countenance, as he was brought forward, seemed to intimate that he was as yet uncertain whether he was about to be punished or rewarded for the suggestion. He was not long in doubt. You think he has run away, do you, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe demanded Squeers. Yes, please, sir, apostrophe replied the little boy. And what, sir, apostrophe said Squeers, catching the little boy suddenly by the arms and whisking up his drapery in a most dexterous manner, what reason have you to suppose that any boy would want to run away from this establishment? Eh, sir? Apostrophe, the child raised a dismal cry, by way of answer, and Mr. Squeers, throwing himself into the most favorable attitude for exercising his strength, beat him until the little urchin in his writhings actually rolled out of his hands, when he mercifully allowed him to roll away, as he best could. There, apostrophe said Squeers. Now if any other boy thinks Smike has run away, I shall be glad to have a talk with him. Apostrophe, there was, of course, a profound silence, during which Nicholas showed his disgust as plainly as looks could show it. Well, Nickleby, apostrophe said Squeers, eyeing him maliciously. You think he has run away, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I think it extremely likely, apostrophe replied Nicholas, in a quiet manner. Oh, you do you? Apostrophe, apostrophe sneered Squeers. Maybe you know he has? Apostrophe, I know nothing of the kind. Apostrophe, he didn't tell you he was going, I suppose, did he? Apostrophe, apostrophe sneered Squeers. He did not, apostrophe replied Nicholas. I am very glad he did not, for it would then have been my duty to have warned you in time. Apostrophe, which no doubt you would have been devilish sorry to do, apostrophe said Squeers in a taunting fashion. I should indeed, apostrophe replied Nicholas. You interpret my feelings with great accuracy. Apostrophe, Mrs. Squeers had listened to this conversation from the bottom of the stairs, but, now losing all patience, she hastily assumed her night jacket and made her way to the scene of action. What's all this here to do? Apostrophe, apostrophe said the lady, as the boys fell off right and left, to save her the trouble of clearing a passage with her brawny arms. What on earth are you talking to him for, Squeery? Apostrophe, apostrophe, why, my dear, apostrophe said Squeers, the fact is, that Smike is not to be found. Apostrophe, well, I know that, apostrophe said the lady, and where's the wonder? If you get a parcel of proud stomach teachers that set the young dogs a-rebelling, what else can you look for? Now, young man, you just have the kindness to take yourself off to the schoolroom, and take the boys off with you, and don't you stir out of there till you have leave given you, or you and I may fall out in a way that'll spoil your beauty, handsome as you think yourself, and so I tell you. Apostrophe, indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Nicholas. Yes, and indeed again, Mr. Jackanapes, apostrophe said the excited lady, and I wouldn't keep such as you in the house another hour, if I had my way. Nor would you, if I had mine, replied Nicholas. Now, boys, said Mrs. Squeers, mimicking, as nearly as she could, the voice and manner of the usher. Follow your leader, boys, and take pattern by Smike if you dare. See what he'll get for himself when he is brought back, and, mind, I tell you that you shall have as bad, and twice as bad, if you so much as open your mouths about him. If I catch him, said Squeers, I'll only stop short of flaying him alive. I give you notice, boys. If you catch him, retorted Mrs. Squeers, contemptuously, you are sure to. You can't help it, if you go the right way to work. Come, away with you. With these words, Mrs. Squeers dismissed the boys, and after a little light skirmishing with those in the rear who were pressing forward, to get out of the way, but were detained for a few moments by the throng in front, succeeded in clearing the room, when she confronted her spouse alone. He is off, said Mrs. Squeers. The cowhouse and stable are locked up, so he can't be there, and he's not downstairs anywhere, for the girl has looked. He must have gone New York way, and by a public road too. Why must he? Inquired Squeers. Stupid. Said Mrs. Squeers angrily. He hadn't any money, had he? Never had a penny of his own in his whole life, that I know of, replied Squeers. To be sure, rejoined Mrs. Squeers, and he didn't take anything to eat with him, that I'll answer for. Ha! 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 Laughed Squeers. Then, of course, said Mrs. S. He must beg his way, and he could do that, nowhere, but on the public road. That's true, exclaimed Squeers, clapping his hands. True. Yes, but you would never have thought of it, for all that, if I hadn't said so, replied his wife. Now, if you take the chaise, and go one road, and I borrow Swallow's chaise, and go the other, what with keeping our eyes open, and asking questions, one or other of us is pretty certain to lay hold of him. The worthy lady's plan was adopted, and put in execution without a moment's delay. After a very hasty breakfast, and the prosecution of some inquiries in the village, the result of which seemed to show that he was on the right track, Squeers started forth in the pony chaise, intent upon discovery and vengeance. Shortly afterwards, Mrs. Squeers, arrayed in the white top coat, and tied up in various shawls and handkerchiefs, issued forth in another chaise and another direction, taking with her a good-sized bludgeon, several odd pieces of strong cord, and a stout laboring man, all provided and carried upon the expedition, with the sole object of assisting in the capture, and, once caught, ensuring the safe custody of the unfortunate Smike. Nicholas remained behind, in a tumult of feeling, sensible that whatever might be the upshot of the boy's flight, nothing but painful and deplorable consequences were likely to ensue from it. Death, from want and exposure to the weather, was the best that could be expected from the protracted wandering of so poor and helpless a creature, alone and unfriended, through a country of which he was wholly ignorant. There was little, perhaps, to choose between this fate and a return to the tender mercies of the Yorkshire school, but the unhappy being had established a hold upon his sympathy and compassion, which made his heart ache at the prospect of the suffering he was destined to undergo. He lingered on, in restless anxiety, picturing a thousand possibilities, until the evening of next day, when Squeers returned, alone, and unsuccessful. No news of the scamp. Said the schoolmaster, who had evidently been stretching his legs, on the old principle, not a few times during the journey. I'll have consolation for this out of somebody, Nickleby, if Mrs. Squeers don't hunt him down, so I give you warning. " "It is not in my power to console you, sir," said Nicholas. "It is nothing to me. Isn't it?" said Squeers in a threatening manner. "We shall see." "We shall," rejoined Nicholas. "Here's the pony run right off his legs, and me obliged to come home with a hack cob that'll cost 15 shillings besides other expenses," said Squeers. "Who's to pay for that, do you hear?" Nicholas shrugged his shoulders and remained silent. "I'll have it out of somebody, I tell you," said Squeers, his usual harsh, crafty manner changed to open bullying. "None of your whining vaporings here, Mr. Puppy, but be off to your kennel, for it's past your bedtime. Come, get out." Nicholas bit his lip and knit his hands involuntarily, for his finger ends tingled to avenge the insult. But remembering that the man was drunk, and that it could come to little but a noisy brawl, he contented himself with darting a contemptuous look at the tyrant, and walked, as majestically as he could, upstairs. Not a little nettled, however, to observe that Miss Squeers and Master Squeers, and the servant girl, were enjoying the scene from a snug corner, the two former indulging in many edifying remarks about the presumption of poor upstarts, which occasioned a vast deal of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.